Devlin sat in silence, absorbing what he had just heard. "You'll be a target now, too," said Garin, suddenly changing the subject. "It will have gotten back to Xenia from the palace investigators by now that you and Rena cornered the last of her hirelings because you heard a noise and came to investigate," he explained. "That will be enough." "I'm not afraid of Xenia," Devlin growled, as some part of his mind took a half step back and said, "Oh, aren't we now, boyo?" "Even so," said Garin, "your best bet is to keep your head down until Friday. Amanda's safe where she is, with Rena hovering around, in a manner she normally wouldn't put up with. As for you, well, you can stay here. You and I can spend the week enhancing our reputations as drunken idiots." "Sterling," said Devlin glumly, "I don't suppose you've any books in a language I can read." "Well, no," said Garin apologetically. "However..." He went to the far end of the room and whipped back a tapestry, revealing an alcove where Devlin had thought there would be a wall. In that alcove was what looked remarkably like the usual stage setup for the Art of Noise, less the stack of keyboards and things in the center that Caitlin always stood behind. Garin picked up a guitar from his stand, slung it over his shoulder, and fiddled with the controls a bit before turning to Devlin with a smile on his lean, aristocratic face. "I understand you're a drummer," he said. Amanda was permitted no visitors for the next 4 days. The medical staff were putting her through a rigid regimen of, well, of something. Devlin didn't really understand what, but whatever it was, he couldn't go and see her again. Rena remained in the infirmary wing for the entire time, never going farther from Amanda's side than the absolute minimum distance the medicos would permit, watching hawk-like over their every move and procedure. She called on her wristcom to Garin or Cora with periodic updates. After the first day, Garin found one for Devlin, too, so he could communicate with her directly. What time wasn't spent fretting over Xenia's next move, Amanda's condition, or Rena's increasing level of sleep deprivation, Garin, Cora, and Devlin spent noodling around as a trio combo. Garin was quite a good guitarist, perhaps not as talented as Azalin, but somewhat more experienced. Cora was a passable bassist, though she lacked Moose McEachern's thunderous intensity. Here, then, was where Amanda had honed her skills as a razor-sharp rhythm guitarist, playing the backing line behind her beloved brother's axe, while Cora and Rena provided the rest of the rhythm line. It struck Devlin as somehow fitting that Rena Dragonar should be a fellow drummer. Garin and Devlin spent the evenings talking about this and that, getting to know each other better, putting away a bit more of the Saurian brandy. On Wednesday night, Devlin actually lost track of his intake enough to get rather pleasantly pissed. Garin, knowing that Coromel was on duty and that he could clear himself out in a few seconds if he needed to, modulated his trick liver to achieve a similar state for parody's sake, at which point their conversation swerved into strange, uncharted territories. Devlin earnestly strove to impress upon Garin that, back on Earth, Amanda's attitude toward her brother, and vice versa, would be considered more than just a skosh odd, that it was in fact a crime in most places on Earth, including the one he came from and the one he lived in now, but that he, Devlin Edison Carter, was a high-minded enough, nay, galactically cosmopolitan enough, individual that, if it didn't bother either of the Desslers, it flaming well wouldn't bother him either, by God. Devlin Carter, he declared, was a big enough fellow to share the woman he loved with her own brother, if that was what she wanted. Garin accepted this magnanimous declaration with the grave gratitude it deserved, and replied that he held precisely the same opinion regarding his sister's liaisons with a certain outlaw Earthman, which, though not actually legal on Gamelon, would certainly be considered every bit as weird there as would Garin and Amanda's relationship on Earth. Furthermore, and to wit, Garin announced that he, Garin Tultalian Desler, felt that Devlin Carter was a damned fine individual, even if he was a somewhat peculiar color, and if he felt adventurous to try that sharing in real time, as it were, Garen would be pleased to broaden his horizons. We can only speculate as to how Devlin would have reacted to this remarkable offer, for at that particular moment he lost what little remained of his consciousness. On Thursday, he remembered very little of the aforementioned conversation, which was probably just as well, and spent most of the afternoon regretting having ever decided to become a drummer. On Friday, the negotiations with the Volgar came to a successful close. There was a ticker-tape parade for Deslok and the Volgar ambassador, a bristly, rather porcine lady named Glur. But then, all Volgar are bristly and rather porcine, so perhaps the description does Madam Ambassador Glur an injustice. It was announced that there would be a formal reception in the Great Hall of the Imperial Palace. Receiving line, dinner, dancing, the works, very high class. Even Garen, in the official doghouse though he was, would be expected to attend. "Grand," Devlin observed glumly. "Well, I suppose I can catch up on my television watching." "Not a bit of it, dear fellow," said Garen in his stupid mode voice. "You'll be attending as well. You're my dear sister's guest, after all." Devlin gave him a look. "Come off it, Garen. Amanda's not going to be at a flamin' reception dance in her condition." "Come off it yourself, Devlin," Garen replied. "She'll be there. Bloodied but unbowed and all that, eh, what?" said Garen, in a decent impression of Devlin's own camouflage accent. "It'll be an opportunity to show Xenia that she can't keep Amanda down. Mark my words, she'll be there, and she'll be most upset if you're not in attendance. So get up to Katerina's apartment and get your suit, old man, and Coromel will make sure your boots are shined." For the second time in a week, Devlin Carter stood in the Great Hall of Deslok's palace, but this time the place was packed with people, and he didn't have the comforting presences of Amanda and Rena at his sides to make him feel less obvious and unwelcome. The vastness of the hall was a sea of uniforms, gowns, and finery. Devlin stood near one of the pillars along the middle of one side of the room, trying not to be visible. Emperor Deslok stood before the head table, which was on a raised dais like a stage at the head of the room. He still wore his starkly simple uniform, with the equally burly, scarlet-haired figure of Grenlo Dragonar a bit behind him. Xenia was there, standing at her father's left. Devlin noticed her staring at him a few times with a very strong, uneasy-making gaze. Garen stood three empty places down, to his father's right, with Coromel beside him. Every now and then he caught Devlin's eye and gave him a broad, drunken wink. Devlin noted the real expression behind the boozy mask and felt a little better. As the orchestra finished tuning and prepared to start the first dance number, they were suddenly interrupted by the arrival of a chamberlain's messenger. Hurriedly they rearranged themselves and launched into a fanfare instead, and the chamberlain, standing near the grand entrance, boomed, "Her Imperial Highness, the Princess Amanda Electra Dessler!" The doors slammed open with a deep crash like distant thunder, and there stood Amanda. Devlin caught his breath, for he had never in his life seen her like this before. She was wearing a costume that seemed half uniform and half ball gown. It had a voluminous skirt that reached to the floor, but the upper half of it bore more than a family resemblance to the tunic and jacket of her naval uniform, complete with the rank pips glittering on either side of her collar's throat notch, and the gleaming silver braid at her left shoulder. And ball gown or not, she yet wore her blaster and gladius at her belt. The assemblage ought to have looked ridiculous, and yet, somehow, the way she wore it, it did not. Even the silver tiara surmounting her brow didn't seem out of place. She strode into the hall, her shoes, invisible under the skirts of her gown, clicking against the alloy floor, holding herself perfectly erect, head high. Only a very slight stiffness in her gait betrayed the fact that her wounds were not fully healed. The bruises were gone from her face, and the bandages too. She looked almost normal, except for the mirror-windowed metal plate the size of the palm of Devlin's hand which covered her right eye socket, and the black-edged, laser-sealed scar the width of a handspan that crossed underneath it, from the middle of her cheek to the bridge of her nose. The disfigurement, still fresh, served somehow to accentuate the loveliness of the unmarked side of her face. It was as though Devlin had never really noticed before now how beautiful she was. Faced with it now, he gasped, not in horror, but in awe. Rather than being a jumble of contradictory images, the softness of the white ball gown, the martial harshness of the uniform-cut jacket, the serene beauty of a princess, the battle-scarred pride of a warrior, she was a complete and coherent picture. Amanda Electra Dessler, the crown princess of Imperial Gamelon. She took his breath away. One step behind her, slightly to her right, Katerina Dragonar matched her stride for stride, dressed in her immaculate dress uniform, which somehow failed utterly to mute the luscious curves of her miniature Venus body with its hard-edged military formality. Even with her face set in a scowl of concentration, her aqua eyes scanning the vast crowd, the muscles of her blaster arm tense, she radiated an air of sensuality. The contrast was almost alarming in its intensity. Devlin smiled and stepped away from the pillar, straightening himself into something like attention as Amanda and Rena drew even with his position. Amanda's eye flickered toward him, taking notice. She smiled and stopped even with him, looked from one side of the assembly to the other, and dropped a very competently done curtsy as Rena, at her side, bowed without taking her eyes off the room. The orchestra, finished with their fanfare, began the first waltz. Deslok took a step forward from the receiving line, no doubt intending to have the first dance with his daughter himself, but she only nodded to him, then left-faced and marched, head held high, to Devlin Carter. "Dance with me, Earthman," she said.
"Here, in front of everyone?" he murmured.
"Yes, Devlin," she thought, and he cocked an eyebrow in surprise that she'd have thought of communicating with him that way. Thinking loudly enough, near enough to him, that he couldn't help but pick it up even with his unconscious shields in place. "Right here in front of everyone. Dance with me." Devlin mustered his courtliest bow, then stepped forward, took her outstretched hand, put his free hand on her waist near the hilt of her gladius, and swept her into the waltz. He was a competent dancer and handled her gently, conscious of her still hurting wounds. She smiled at him as they whirled around the room.
"This is quite convenient," she remarked. "I can say anything to you I like, and no one will be the wiser, unless I make you blush."
"It has its uses," he replied, smiling. Then the smile faltered a bit as, in a turn, he caught sight of Xenia, staring hard at them from the head table, the hatred burning so intensely in her eyes that he didn't need to be a telepath to pick it up.
"Are you sure this is a good idea?" he asked. "These people are scandalized. Your father doesn't seem all that upset, but Xenia looks like she's about to take a bite out of her plate, and some of the officers seem to be fainting."
"Let them faint. Let them be scandalized. Let Xenia eat her plate, or her heart out, or anything else she likes. I love you, Devlin Carter of Earth." Amanda smiled again. A private smile, just for the two of them. "And I don't give a damn who knows it." Devlin blinked at her, astounded by the thought. But his own answering thought was automatic.
"I love you too, Amanda. I do."
"I know," she told him. And they danced. When the waltz was finished, they went to the head table and presented themselves to the Emperor. He seemed faintly amused by them, greeting Devlin with the same highly respectful formality as the last time, and Amanda with a slightly more regimented version of the same paternal fondness. Garen and Devlin exchanged idiotic bonhomie underlined by conspiratorial glee. Xenia somehow forced herself to be civil to her sister and Devlin, though the sight of her hated sister in the arms of an Earthman in public obviously revolted her to the point where she had a hard time speaking. If nothing else, since he could feel her revulsion and loathing, Devlin had to give her credit for the grit it took to maintain her outward air of cool cordiality.
Diplomats and officers moved along the line, greeting the assembled royalty and their guests, then going off to dance. As the evening wore on, things slipped into a pleasant monotony. Dinner was pleasant, even with the continued Arctic undercurrents between Xenia, her sister, and the Dragonar girls. Rena abstained from intoxicants, being on duty, but still managed to be quite a bit of fun. Devlin was getting used to her flirtatious style of play, which made him able to play back, something she found at first confounding, and then, apparently, highly stimulating. Garen got drunker and happier, finally throwing an arm around Devlin's neck and declaring him a damn fine son of an Earthman, which gave Devlin the oddest feeling of déjà vu for some reason. Then, abruptly, as yet another man in a uniform approached the head table, Devlin's heart skipped a beat. Suddenly, without warning, the Garen-like air of partially intoxicated, partially stupid goodwill vanished from his face, and he stood up as though his chair had been electrified. Rena was on her feet a half second after him, her blaster already drawn, but Devlin's hand had plunged into and whipped out of his trouser pocket already. He flung his free arm out, leaning to shield as much of Amanda as possible with his own body, as his gun hand thrust forward with a glint of chrome in it. The sizzling whine of a charging phased plasma gun mounted and gave way to the weapon's characteristic spitting crash discharge, and the man who had been approaching the head table pitched backward, an ugly burn marring the center of his white-clad chest like a lethal corsage. In an instant the room erupted into chaos. Alarms howled and armored shutters slammed as the palace security systems registered the weapon discharge. Armored guardsmen flooded into the great hall, their weapons at the ready. Garen Dessler blared a drunken challenge and hurled himself past Rena and Amanda to crash into Devlin and bear him down to the floor. This seemingly aggressive move was actually calculated to prevent Devlin from being spitted by the bayonets of ANSI guardsmen, since, as far as they could tell, he had just assassinated Palace Chief Investigator Rijiger for no reason whatsoever. By the time everything got sorted out, Devlin was sitting very uncomfortably in a very comfortable chair, while Emperor Deslok played idly with his PPG on the top of the Imperial desk. "So," said Deslok evenly, "you brought this into the palace without asking permission, without telling anyone you had it. Not even my daughter." "Yes, sir. That is to say, no, sir. Not even her," said Devlin, who couldn't shake the uncanny feeling that he was in the Dean of Students' office being called to account for an infraction. "Why?" Deslok asked calmly. "I'm an unregistered telepath," Devlin told him flatly. "I carry it to protect myself from the Psi-Corps conscription forces." "There are no Psi-Corps conscription forces on Gamelon," Deslok informed him, still calm. "I know that, sir," said Devlin, "but when one has been on the run as long as I have, well, habits die hard." Deslok considered this, then carefully restored the clip to the weapon, made certain the safety interlock was set, and slid it back across the top of his massive marble desk toward its owner. Devlin blinked at it. I can have it back." Deslok nodded. "You'll be returning to Earth soon," he said. "And I'm not sure if you've heard, but the extension to the Psionics Regulation and Protection Act passed this morning." Devlin looked slightly ashen, and replied in a subdued tone, "No, I hadn't heard." "Well, it passed," said Deslok. "So your need for your weapon will be greater than ever if you return." He nodded toward the PPG. "I won't send a man who has saved my daughter's life twice into a situation like that unarmed. I'm loath to send him into it at all," he added with the faintest hint of a wry smile. "But I have the feeling he's as stubborn as Amanda." Devlin smiled, reclaiming his weapon and tucking it away. "You'd be right about that," he said. Then, his smile vanishing, he said, "Sir, about..." Deslok held up a hand, palm outward. "Don't say it," he said. I've taken my own measures already. He pressed a key on the comm panel built into his desk. Xenia, come here, please. The office door opened, and Xenia, still in her ball gown, entered, looking a trifle frightened. Devlin had to hand it to her again. She was, in fact, cold shit scared. That was obvious even without any probing.
"Yes, Father," she said, outwardly calm.
"Xenia, there have been a rash of assassination attempts in my house over the past week," Deslok informed her as if it were news to her. "This is clearly an intolerable state of affairs."
"Father, I..." she began, but Deslok interrupted her.
"Until I know for certain who is behind these attacks, I think it best that all three of my children leave Gamelon. Garen will cut his leave short and return to the Vengeance this afternoon. Amanda will return to Earth and finish out her vacation there. And you, Xenia..."
"Me?" Xenia squeaked. "But, Father, what could..."
"No, Xenia, hear me out," said Deslok. "That last attacker disturbs me greatly. Investigator Rijiger was an old and trusted member of this household, and yet he had a poisoned dart in his sleeve and was preparing to use it, knowing that the act would almost certainly cost him his life. That speaks of a deeply entrenched, highly involved conspiracy to murder at least one, possibly all, of my heirs. You may just as easily have been the target of this last attempt. It's entirely possible you owe Mr. Carter here your life." Xenia's eyes flashed at Devlin, promising terrible retribution for this outrage, but she was all composure as she said to her father,
"Do you really think so? I thought..."
Again, Deslok cut her off. "Until I find out what enemy of my house is determined enough, cunning enough, ruthless enough, and foolish enough to infiltrate this palace and make an agent of a retainer as established as Rijiger, I must know that all three of my children are safe. You, Xenia, are especially vulnerable, as you have no Dragonar to protect you. You will go to the Academy, where the faculty and the military police can shelter you."
"The Academy?" Xenia blurted. "But, Father, we agreed that I was to be excused from military service. My delicate constitution, I could never..."
"It's only for a short time," Deslok told her firmly. "Until this threat is uncovered and exterminated, then you can come home."
"But I...
Devlin struggled not to smile. Xenia knew damn well she was in no danger from the mysterious malevolence that had been orchestrating events against Amanda all week, but she couldn't possibly tell Deslok that. All she could do was stammer a bit, then acquiesce as gracefully as possible and go to assemble her things. The look she gave Devlin as she turned to go, thinking Deslok couldn't see her, would have curdled concrete. "So," said Deslok, rising to his feet. Devlin got up with him, and Deslok put out a hand. "You and Amanda had best leave as soon as you can," he said as they shook hands. "I'll provide you with a ship. You may need one of those in the coming days as well."
"Thank you, sir," said Devlin.
"You have saved my heir twice in the last week, Mr. Carter," said Deslok gravely. "Deslok Koraino Desler does not forget such things." What more needed to be said after that?
"Well, goodbye, old sport," said Garen cheerily, pumping Devlin's arm up and down. "Awfully good meeting you. Have to do it again sometime."
He leaned closer and added, sotto voce, "Preferably without the assassination plot next time."
"You've that right," Devlin murmured. "Cheerio, old man," he replied in a louder tone. "Watch out for those void ghosts on the rim, eh, what?"
"Goodbye, Carter," said Coromel with a faint, indulgent amusement. "It has been an interesting week."
"Indeed it has, m'lady, indeed it has," said Devlin.
Amanda, back in her flight suit, as Devlin was back in his earth clothes and his old coat, bade a friendly goodbye to Cora. Then she kissed her brother goodbye, with rather more fire than your average younger sister demonstrates under such circumstances. Finally, she turned to Rena and took her by the hands.
I still think I should come back with you, said Rena.
You'd have nothing to do, Amanda told her. Besides, you've your career to think of. Who would lead Icewing in my place? Drelvon? I shudder at the mere thought. At any rate, I need you to keep me posted on what Xenia gets up to in her exile. This won't be the end of it. I have to know what I'm coming back to this summer.
Rena grinned and snapped a salute. Count on me, boss, she said.
I always do, Amanda replied.
She embraced her oldest friend, kissed her goodbye, and then went to prep the small scout ship her father had commanded be made available to her to take them back to Earth.
Well, Carter, I guess this is goodbye, said Rena, turning to face Devlin. It's been fun, bumps in the road aside.
She gave him a grin. You've given me a couple of things to think about.
Devlin went a little pink and replied, And you me.
Take care of yourself, Rena.
You two take care of each other, she replied, then grabbed him by the lapels and planted a positively toe-curling kiss on him.
Definitely something to think about, she told him upon releasing him, then spun him around and propelled him on his way with a hand in the middle of his back. Now get going, before I decide to keep you for myself.
Righto, said Devlin, trotting toward the stubby little scout ship, which was now whining and whirring in a pre-flight power-up sequence.
He glanced back over his shoulder and caught Rena's farewell wink.
I think Amanda would give you a bit of a fight about that, he thought to her with a mental grin.
Only over who gets to go first, Rena replied, and Garen wondered why the Earthman suddenly blushed scarlet right before he vanished into the scout ship's open hatch.
Aerie Productions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features, Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword, The Courtship of Princess Dessler. The Symphony will return.
Xenia Dessler sat at the desk in her stateroom aboard the Destiny's Fist, seething. Her, the Princess Xenia, being ferried to the Imperial Academy on Gamalus 9 like so much baggage. Uniforms, discipline, hardship, abuse, bad food. For her safety? Amanda and her pet Earthmen would pay for this, oh yes. She reviewed the security video of the shooting of Investigator Rijiger one more time. Her initial impression had been right. The video proved it beyond doubt. Devlin Carter had acted, had sprung up from his seat and drawn his weapon, before Rijiger had had a chance to act even remotely suspicious. When struck down, the chief investigator was still walking calmly toward the table, his arms at his sides, the dart completely concealed in his right sleeve. There was no way the Earthman could have known he was coming with murder in his mind. Unless he could read minds. That fit with what Rijiger had told Xenia about the Earthman's involvement in her hit squad's failure Saturday night, too. Heard a noise? Loud enough to wake him? Unlikely. But the high emotions of Amanda's fight for her life, the deaths of three of her four attackers? Yes. Perfect. Xenia smiled, picked up the telephone built into her desk, and dialed.